Today, more debt ceiling handbrake turns casts a volatile outlook. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, just a couple of days ago, markets bounced on the back of hopes talks on raising the US debt limit were in play. Ongoing confidence a deal to raise the $31.4 trillion debt limit could be reached in coming days. And as a result of that, the S&P 500 benchmark climbed more than 2%. But this came to a sudden halt, because the optimism that had been building through the week fell away. As a result, US stocks ended lower and the dollar lost ground on Friday as the negotiations to raise the debt limit ceiling were put on hold. And of course, this means moving closer to the deadline to avoid a default. President Joe Biden, who's in Japan for the Group of Seven summit of world leaders, is expected to return home on Sunday and will hold a press conference to update on the progress of the talks. By the way, in a similar debt ceiling crisis back in 2011, Congress increased the limit just 2 days before the US government ran out of funds. This prompted S&P to cut the US credit rating, sparking a sell-off in equities. The markets seemed to be going into this weekend thinking that the talks were going to move towards the framework of an agreement. But what you're now seeing is the Republicans saying no, this is not acceptable, and they just staged a walkout, said Quinsby Crosby, chief global strategist at LPL Financial. It could be to put more pressure on the Democratic caucus and also take advantage of the fact that Biden is overseas, but this headline on a Friday afternoon is definitely not a positive. Initial reports that debt ceiling negotiations reached an impasse rattled markets, even as investors were scrutinizing Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell's remarks in a panel discussion for clues regarding next month's interest rate decision.
And that the costs of getting rid of it were too high, so you just were getting used to it. Of course, ultimately, the Fed did step up and restore price stability. And one lesson from that era is that price stability is really the foundation of a strong economy, and that the economy doesn't work for anyone without price stability. Another is that high inflation is the responsibility and the obligation of the central bank to restore and sustain price stability. So today, while inflation isn't as high as it was when I was in college, it's nonetheless far above our 2% objective, and many people are currently experiencing high inflation for the first time in their lives. It's not a headline to say that they really don't like it. So we are very aware that high inflation imposes significant hardship as it reduces purchasing power, especially for those who are at the margins of the economy and living paycheck to paycheck and need to use all of their incoming income to pay for food, housing, and transportation and other essentials. And that's why the committee is so strongly committed to returning to our 2% goal. We think that failure to get inflation down would not only prolong the pain, but also increase, ultimately, the social costs of getting back to price stability, causing even greater harm to families and businesses. And we aim to avoid that by remaining steadfast in pursuit of our goals.
And so I wanted to ask you how you think about the use of financial stability tools and liquidity tools as opposed to more traditional monetary policy tools and how they fit together.
It's an interesting question, but I want to start by saying, though, that the overall, the banks and the banking system are strong and resilient and well-positioned to deal with the challenges they may face now or in the future. So, as you pointed out, we do have separate tools, monetary policy to achieve our macroeconomic objectives, liquidity, supervisory, and regulatory tools to address financial stability issues. But I see an important distinction between separation — this is the separation principle — separation and independence. Our tools can have separate objectives, but their effects are often not entirely independent. So the tools are complementary almost all of the time because financial and macroeconomic stability are so deeply intertwined. In fact, our consensus statement notes that sustainably achieving maximum employment and price stability depends on a stable financial system. So because they're so intertwined, to me, there is not likely to be an absolute and complete separation of the tools, nor is that possible or desirable. And I think as Ben's research and the global financial crisis demonstrated, financial stability affects macroeconomic stability and vice versa. We saw that clearly at the outset of the pandemic. As a result, the tools that we use to address concerns in either arena can and will affect both, especially during extreme circumstances. That said, yes, the tools are separate, they have individual purposes, and most of the time each can be used for its intended purpose without compromising the other. For example, as you pointed out, when banking stresses emerged in early March, we used our liquidity tools, the discount window and the Bank Term Funding Program, to make liquidity available to banks that might need it. And that liquidity supported the stability of the financial system without restricting the use of our monetary policy tools to promote price stability. While the financial stability tools help to calm conditions in the banking sector, developments there, on the other hand, are contributing to tighter credit conditions and are likely to weigh on economic growth, hiring, and inflation. So as a result, our policy rate may not need to rise as much as it would have otherwise to achieve our goals. Of course, the extent of that is highly uncertain.
In his remarks, Powell said that uncertainties surrounding the lagging impact of past rate hikes and recent bank credit tightening made it unclear whether more monetary tightening will be necessary. The greenback lost ground against the basket of world currencies after Powell's remarks and opened the door on the possibility of a rate pause at the conclusion of next month's policy meeting. The dollar index fell 0.35% and the euro was up 0.32%. All eyes are on Washington and investors remain focused on the debt ceiling, said David Carter, investment specialist at JP Morgan. It's a bit like watching a nuclear standoff and hoping the other guy isn't crazy enough to hit the button. Investors are trying to better understand if tighter bank lending due to the regional banking crisis will allow the Fed to at least pause on future rate increases, he added. This is new territory, and it is not perfectly clear if the Fed will allow tighter bank lending to replace tighter monetary policy. Adding to market volatility, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen told bank CEOs that more mergers may be necessary to staunch the banking liquidity crisis, according to CNN. Shares of regional banks, which were the first in the industry to feel the impact of the Fed's tightening policy, fell, with the KBW Regional Banking Index down nearly 2.17% on the session. Still, the index was still up 6.2% on the week to snap a three-week streak of declines, as investors view the troubles in the sector as largely contained, at least for now. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.33% to 33,426. The S&P 500 lost 0.14% to 4,191, and the NASDAQ composite dropped 0.24% to 12,657. Treasury yields wobbled on debt ceiling worries, but resumed their ascent as another Fed hike in June does remain possible in the wake of solid economic data, and Fed officials reiterating this past week that inflation remains too high. Benchmark 10-year notes rose to 3.691, while the 30-year bond fell slightly to 3.935. Agricultural equipment maker Deere & Company raised its annual profit forecast as surging farm incomes boosted purchases, but their shares dipped 1%, and shares of apparel and shoe retailer Foot Locker tumbled 27% after it cut its annual sales and profit forecasts. It saw a steep drop in demand despite big discounts meant to clear inventory. Foot Locker's updates wrapped up a week of caution from other retailers this week, including Target, Home Depot, and TJX companies, as consumers adjust to stubbornly high inflation, higher interest rates, and, of course, poor sentiment. Investment bank Morgan Stanley shares wobbled after CEO James Gorman announced plans to step down in the next year. Shares fell 2.3%. While all three major stock indices ended the session modestly in the red, they did notch gains for the week, which was actually marked by solid economic data and the tail end of a better-than-expected earnings season. For the week, though, the Dow gained 0.38%, the S&P 500 climbed 1.65%, and the NASDAQ advanced 3.04%. And by the way, the S&P 500 and NASDAQ notched their biggest weekly percentage gains since the first week in March. Money managers are increasingly favoring longer-term corporate bonds. About 26% of U.S. investment-grade corporate bond sales this month have been in securities maturing in 30 or more years, compared with just 4% in April and 50% all of last year. About a third of Pfizer's $31 billion US dollar bond sale this week was 30 years plus. BlackRock Investment Institute Global Chief Investment Strategist Wei Li said, "In the current environment, the choices facing central banks are really, really tough. They can fight inflation at all costs, but then they hurt growth and they hurt equities. Or they can say this environment is shaped by supply coming from the labor force, net zero transition, geopolitical fragmentation, and we have to live with higher inflation or implicitly higher inflation. But when that happens, an inflation premium comes back, a term premium comes back, and bonds suffer. So the Goldilocks outcome, where equities goes higher over a sustained period of time, alongside bonds, I think that period is over," he said. "I think being very dynamic and tactical, even in your strategic asset allocations, is important. Our research shows that to be spot on with your equity bond mix is three times as important versus during the Great Moderation." Over in Europe, European shares closed higher and the German DAX reached a record high as hopes of progress on the US debt ceiling talks did boost investor sentiment, of course, until it fell over. Europe's trading day ended prior to reports that the talks had stalled. The pan-European Stoxx 600 rose 0.66%. Eurozone government bonds were little changed on Friday, but on track for their biggest weekly gain since mid-April, driven by a bout of optimism about that debt ceiling and stronger economic data. Germany's 10-year bond yield, the benchmark for the Eurozone, ended at 2.45%. That has risen significantly in recent days. UK stock markets largely ended higher on Friday, helped by a wave of optimism that the US debt default would be avoided, as well as British consumers showing some increased confidence. The benchmark FTSE index traded 0.19% higher. Adding to the positive tone was the result of the latest survey from market research firm GfK, which indicated that British consumer confidence had risen for the fourth month in a row, to its highest since February 2022. The headline confidence index rose to minus 27 in May from minus 30 in April, moving further away from the minus 49 record low last September, when former Prime Minister Liz Truss's mini-budget resulted in chaos in the financial markets. The corporate earnings slate was relatively quiet on Friday, but Smith Group impressed after the engineering firm raised guidance for organic revenue growth to 10% for the financial year after a strong third quarter. Q3 was another strong quarter for Smiths, building on the record performance we achieved in the first half, said CEO Paul Keel. "We've now delivered eight consecutive quarters of growth, enabled by our strategy of accelerated growth, improving execution and investing in our people." Elsewhere, the UK government announced plans to support its semiconductor industry, seeking to boost its domestic chip-making capabilities in the wake of disruptions to global supplies over the last year or so. The government said it will initially invest up to £200 million from 2023-25 after expanding its commitment to up to £1 billion in the next decade. Semiconductors underpin the devices we use every day and will be crucial to advancing the technologies of tomorrow, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said in a statement. Most Asian stock markets rose on Friday and were headed for a positive week amid optimism over that US debt ceiling, of course, before the news reversed, although there were concerns about a slowing economic recovery in China and a hawkish Federal Reserve stance kept gains limited. Japan's Nikkei 225 index outpaced its peers for a fifth straight session, adding 0.77%, and reaching its highest level since the 1990s bubble era. The rally was powered by a mix of strong corporate earnings, resilience in the Japanese economy, and bets that the Bank of Japan will maintain its ultra-loose monetary policy. This saw traders largely look past data on Friday that showed Japanese consumer inflation rose in April, moving back towards 40-year highs and potentially heralding more pressure on the Japanese economy. And in fact, the Nikkei 225 index is now up 20% in 2023. And AMP's Shane Oliver said the outperformance versus peers is related to a relatively low level of inflation of 3.4% for the year to April in the world's number three economy. Japan is a little different from the rest of the world in that shares broke out to a new high and have been supported by ongoing low interest rates, Mr. Oliver said. There was a concern that the new Bank of Japan governor would remove some of the stimulus, but that hasn't happened. The Japanese yen strengthened 0.57% versus the greenback to 137.92. Broader Asian markets advanced on Friday, tracking gains on Wall Street amid that growing optimism about the debt ceiling. South Korea's KOSPI added 0.89%, while the Taiwan Weighted Index rose 0.4%, but broader gains were held back by concerns over a slowing post-COVID economic recovery in China, following a string of weaker-than-expected readings this week. Sluggish readings for April suggests a difficult second quarter for the Chinese economy, despite a strong start to the year. China's Shanghai Composite was down 0.42% after lagging peers all week, while the Hong Kong Hang Seng slid 1.4%. The Hang Seng was also pressurized by losses in the e-commerce giant Alibaba Group, which tumbled 5.3% after its first quarter revenue missed estimates. The group is facing slowing demand in China as the country's digital markets mature and as it faces increased competition from other players. Its revenue for the year to March 31 rose just 2%. That's the worst pace of growth since the company listed back in 2014. While the stock had received some support in recent sessions, especially as the Big Short's Michael Burry doubled his stake in the firm, Friday's losses saw it unwind most recent gains, and the stock is now trading just above a two-month low. While Chinese consumer spending rose somewhat this year, it still remains well below pre-COVID levels as consumers stay wary of big purchases amid economic conditions. Alibaba's Chinese direct sales, which makes up the biggest proportion of its revenue, fell 1% in the quarter as consumer spending in China continues to struggle despite the lifting of the anti-COVID measures. And the revenue from other China-focused businesses also declined as the firm faces increased competition from other e-commerce entrants, including JD.com and PTT Holdings. The fresh breakdown in talks to raise the US debt ceiling drove the dollar lower on Friday for the first time in five sessions, helping alternative safe havens led by gold to rally. It's been a bruising week for gold bulls, though, who almost lost the recent upward trajectory in the metal after its rally earlier this month to record highs. Gold for June delivery on New York's COMEX settled at $1,979.90 an ounce, up 1.03% on the day, but the benchmark gold futures contract fell to as low as $1,954 in the previous session, after hitting an all-time high of more than $2,000 on May the 4th. For the week, gold was off just about 2%. A big risk for debt limit talks was that negotiations were too easy, and that could have triggered an early vote, said Ed Moyer, analyst at online trading platform Monier, comparing the situation with the bailout package negotiations during the 2008-2009 Great Financial Crisis. Wall Street has seen this movie before, and we need to see some tension among negotiators in order for a reasonable deal to be reached, he said. Also boosting gold was a weaker dollar that makes commodities priced in the greenback more affordable to holders of other currencies. The dollar index was down for the first time in five sessions, on the dimmed hopes for a quick debt ceiling deal. Crude prices reversed early gains to end low on Friday also, as talks to raise that US debt ceiling hit an impasse again. But oil bulls were still in for some hurrah, the first weekly rise in five from gains between Monday and Wednesday. New York traded West Texas Intermediate settled down 0.26% to $71.70 a barrel, and WTI was up about 2% over the week. The US crude benchmark fell a cumulative 15% over the four prior weeks. London traded Brent's crude. The global benchmark for oil settled down 0.36% at $75.78. And for the week, Brent was up about 2% after four previous weeks of losses totaling about 14%. Traders were reluctant to go into the weekend short on the off chance that an agreement to raise the US debt ceiling was struck over the weekend, said one analyst. And of course, there is still the concern that the Federal Reserve might raise rates for the 11th straight time when the central bank meets on June the 14th. In Australia, markets were basking in debt ceiling resolution before the talk stalled. The benchmark ASX 200 rose 0.59% to 7,279. That's the highest close since May the 1st. There's a combination of okay economic data and better news on the debt ceiling, said Shane Oliver, the chief economist at AMP, but I question how sustained it might be. Debt ceiling talks could still reach a setback. And don't forget the Democrats are being asked to cut spending, which increases the risk of a US recession going into an election next year, and cuts won't go down well with the Democratic base. Cloud accounting business and technology bellwether Xero extended a rally sparked on Thursday by its reporting better-than-expected free cash flow and UK subscriber growth for the year ended March 31. The stock firmed 5.4%, taking its two-day gain to 14.8%. The tech sector finished as the day's best performer, with financials the runner-up, as banks followed their US peers higher. Commonwealth Bank added 1.84% to $99.80. And Macquarie Group rose 1.66% to $176.51. Lithium miners also enjoyed a strong day that included news that ASX Junior Green Tech Metals secured a $20 million investment from South Korean battery giant LG Energy at 92 cents a share. Green Tech shares closed up 14.1% to 77 cents. And rival Canadian lithium explorer Patrick Battery Metals rose 2.6% to $1.80 as its shares have more than tripled since its December 2022 listing at 60 cents. And in crypto land, some investors fear Bitcoin will revisit a $20 to $25 limit after losing its $27 high. Bitcoin experienced a price drop of around 3%, which caused it to drop to below $27,000 after a whale dumped 1,750 bitcoins on Binance, according to a tweet by Look on Chain. The whale had deposited the bitcoin worth $48 million at the time of the transfer yesterday evening. The blockchain tracking firm had speculated that he may sell all of his freshly deposited holdings shortly after the transfer was made, given that the same whale had sent 5,791 bitcoins on the 21st of April, merely 5 hours before the price experienced approximately a 3% decline. This recent drop in the market leader's price has led to traders becoming more worried that Bitcoin will revisit the $20,000 to $25,000 range soon, according to Sentiment. In a recent tweet, the blockchain intelligence firm indicated that Bitcoin's social dominance had spiked again over the last 24 hours. Increases in this off-chain metric are typically a product of fear. That said, Bitcoin is currently at $26,906 US, while Ether is at $1,815. So standing back, you can see that we continue to see volatility in the markets here, all hinging on what's going to happen with the Fed and, very importantly, the debt ceiling discussions. I continue to hold the view that the debt ceiling thing will be resolved right down to the wire. And I do think there's quite a strong chance that the Fed will lift rates again, unless they can construct an argument to suggest that tighter credit means they don't have to. We'll wait and see. So it's worth noting that the volatility really benefits large players rather than small players. And so sometimes being out of the market is wiser than being in these current conditions. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.